Shall we get started?
There you go. So welcome, everyone. My name is Janice Crampton, and I have the honor and privilege of serving as your executive director for the Association of Independent School Admission Professionals. And whether you are joining us in that 3 o'clock a.m., p.m., or a time zone where you're just starting your day, we are once again honored and thrilled to have you join us as we have Jefferson Burnett, who is the vice president of the National Association of Independent Schools, also known as NAIS, presenting on a topic that is not only timely in the fact that we live in a world environment academically and socially. And again, as we think about economy, understanding and unpacking the international student landscape is critically important for you as an admission and enrollment professional. So as we get ready to turn the mic, literally and figuratively, over to Jefferson, I just want to share with you a few housekeeping details for any of you who are not familiar or have not participated in an ASAP webinar. This session is being recorded. Within 24 hours, you will receive a copy of this recording, as well as a copy of the slide deck that has been part of this presentation today. If Jefferson, you refer to certain articles, or if in the chat box other things come up, we'll provide those as well as additional resources. So in many ways, for as much as I'm not discouraging you from taking notes, I am in fact saying to you, sit back, listen, absorb, and then lean in into many of the opportunities that Jefferson will provide for us by way of chatting and being part of this conversation. I've had the good fortune of working with Jefferson in a wide variety of different capacities. And as I said to Jefferson when we first gathered on this call in preparation for us to hit start, it is truly an honor to be able to have him lead this discussion for a wide variety of different reasons. But one primarily is because in his role at NAIS, he has touched almost every aspect and element of what in fact leads our independent and private schools to that value-added nature, but also in an outward sense, Jefferson has spent a tremendous amount of time looking at data and then allowing those trends to sort of interface with what the reality is. So Jefferson, thank you so much for your time today. And we want to once again, just turn it on over to you to lead us in this discussion entitled Unpacking the International Student Landscape.
Fantastic. Janice, thank you so much. And Cindy, thank you and all of the ASAP team. And just want to do a shout out, Janice, to ASAP, because you all just provide such extraordinary support for our independent school admission community. And it's just tremendous. So thank you all very, very much for everything that you do. And I am just so happy to be with you all this afternoon and to talk about one of my favorite subjects, which is relates to international students. And I do work closely at NAIS, as I'm sure some or all of you may know, with my friend and colleague, Juana Wheeler. So we sort of comprise the intellectual guru-ness around global ed and international students at NAIS. So she's a wonderful teammate. So of course, I always want to thank her for all that she does. It could be I wasn't able to do a cross match of those who are attending this afternoon and those who may have been at the most fabulous ASAP Summer Institute. But if you were there and you happen to attend my session, you will see some familiar slides, but they're not all identical. And when we were together in person, I didn't get to a big and key chunk of the presentation because it was so exciting to do an in-person presentation. So hang in there and we're going to have a lot of fun for the next hour or so. So let's start off. So the presentation is kind of divided or framed in these three buckets. One is the landscape, the international student landscape. So there are a lot of trends that are out there from the trend book, from pop-up surveys and other surveys that Ioana and I have done and other sources. And then I want to pivot from there to introduce a concept which I like to call sort of future is an attitude, and why it's so important as enrollment managers, as admission folk, that we need to be futurists at our schools. For that matter, everyone at school needs to be a futurist, but you in particular, and within the context of this topic of international students, need to be futurists. And we'll unpack that one. And then towards the end, we're gonna do an open afternoon mic, and I've got a couple of questions I'd like to pose to you. And so I hope that we'll have some kind of a conversation in between, or between the chat box and actually asking and discussing amongst ourselves. That would be great. So this is what I have in mind. So shifting sands. One of the major takeaways, certainly for me, from our COVID experience, has been that the pre-pandemic world of terra firma has been absolutely replaced in this post-pandemic, I know we're still in the pandemic, but post-pandemic era of shifting sands. And by that, I mean those things that we used to really be count on, like, I'm going to be traveling to China. I'm going to do more recruitment in Vietnam. I'm going to go to Mexico or Korea. All those things have changed. I'm going to work with agents the way that I always have done so. That has changed. What has emerged from this, and you all are exemplars for this, is this is a time for extraordinary adaptability and extraordinary agility in all that we do. And you absolutely are able to do this. So we're going to dive now into the landscape. The landscape, we're going to get into some numbers. We're going to talk about markets. We're going to talk about agents. But before we do, I'm hoping that in the chat box, you'll just put a little indicator, like, how would you describe your international students? It's important to, when we talk about international students this afternoon, these are kids who are here on F1s. They're not here on J1s. They're not here on a HB2 visa or something of the sort. These are basically F1 international students. So how is your enrollment looking for this academic year? Is it looking great? Is it looking, oh, it's okay? Or is it, well, it's disappointing, but don't tell anyone. So if you can just put that in the chat box, I've got the, thank you, Janice. I've got the chat box open so I can just get a little sense. So if you could do that now, if that is possible, if you're able to insert, and if not, we'll come back to that.
Yes. I'm jumping in as the technology person.
That'd be great. Some
people are saying that the Q and the chat is disabled, but they can put their answers in the Q&A area. Oh. So apologize for that, people. It's really the Q&A area where you're able to write.
Got it. Perfect. So let's do, thank you. Oh, well done. Okay. That doesn't mean okay in the Q&A. It means okay. Yep. All right. Any other thoughts there? Good. Great. Thankfully strong. So kind of what we're getting at, right? And we're going to see this with the data in a moment. Some schools are doing steady as she goes, same as last year. Some are doing better, some are not. So good, higher than the last couple of years, right? Fantastic. And Bonnie, this is great. We should talk later about launching a new student program. That is awesome. Thank you very, very much. All right. So we're going to get into this. Now, I have to tell you that I have been waiting for quite a while to use this slide. So let me tell you about it. I promise it's not all going to be about storytelling for the next half hour or so. Christopher Walken, very keen on Christopher Walken. He's an actor, in case you're not familiar with him. He's most recently been in a Prime program called The Outlaws. And Christopher Walken has this extraordinary head of hair. It's real He's in his late 70s, hasn't changed at all. And in the interview, the interviewer said, well, you know, what was one of the most interesting or peculiar things that you've had? And he said, there was a movie I was working on, and they had me dye my hair this like really odd color. So I went through the entire filming wondering what people thought of my hair. And so at the end of this, the interviewer says, well, is that a true story? And Christopher Walken says, the truth is good, but interesting is better. And so when we look at this is data that is designed to be interesting. It's not causal. It's not anything like that. View the data points as being interesting. Okay. So a little reminder in the international student landscape, 2005, which is the earliest that NEISS data, we got that from SEVP a number of years ago, there were about 13,000 or so international students on F1 visas at NEIS schools. By 2017, we were at around 31,000. That is a huge growth. And when you think about what happened in 2008 and 2009, what was the big event that occurred at that point? That would be the Great Recession of 2008. And at that juncture, huge number of day schools decided that to balance the books and to align with global missions, they would start recruiting international students full pay, particularly from China. And speaking of China, back in 2005, there were 350 Chinese students studying at our schools. By 2015, we were up to about 14,500. It's about half of the total number of international students. Now, these two spheres are really important because as we look at the China market now and going forward, as we look at the entire international student market and where we are now, how schools have built programs and built budgets based on experiences that were definitely pre-pandemic, and we're now in a different time framework. So these interesting data points that I'm going to be sharing with you, and you may have already seen, are super valuable when you talk about them with your admission team, when you talk about them with the head, when you talk about them with the board. Because what we don't want is the board to say, well, we used to have 25% international kids, 20% from China, and now we don't. Why is that? You can say, let me tell you that the national trends are XYZ. This is why this data can be so interesting and helpful. So from 2018 to 2021, for all private schools, you can see a decline, right, in the number of international students who have been attending K-12 schools. So in 2017-16, there were about 92,000 attending independent and other private schools. And you can see by 2021, we're down to like almost 50,000. That's a significant decline, before the pandemic from 2018, 2019, and 2020. We were already seeing a slope going down, a decline in the number of Chinese students, right? That 66% decline in Chinese student enrollment K-12 from 2018 to 2021. So this is in terms of the total number. And then you can see, interestingly here, I know I've got 37%, which is the actual core number. But for Mexico, interestingly, we're beginning to see a little uptick from 18 and through 21. And we might say, well, why is Mexico reemerging as a big market now? Quite a lot of that has to do with a change in administrations. Are you welcome or are you not welcome? We just got, this was about a month ago after I waited a year and a quarter from SEVP for the my Freedom of Information Act request to actually be partially fulfilled. You can see, and this is just for NEIS schools, from 2019-20 school year, from July through June, We have dropped from about 25,000 to about 19,000 kids. So remember, though the numbers are not actually oranges to oranges, we used to have in the heyday around 30, 31,000 kids. So we are definitely seeing this decline. We're seeing a decline also, put it a bit more clearly, in the median number of international students at our school from 14, and now we're looking at about 8. And this was for last year, 21-22 academic year. It's not evenly distributed across the country. So out in the East, which is where I am, Mid-Atlantic, where I am, it is particularly heavy in the decline. So if you look here, this is in the median number of international kids. We're going, it's 56%, 50% drop. New England, on the other hand, you'll see a very high potential, high median numbers still in New England, less of a drop. And part of that is that consistently, the boarding day boarding schools in New England continue to be very attractive to international families. Not to say that the rest of the country isn't attractive, but New England has always had those, I hate to say it, those quote unquote name schools that resonate with parents who are looking at the niche lists and sort of the US News and World Report kind of lists. For type of school, boarding schools, and I don't have any clear, I can't say that, wow, boarding schools have suddenly had a huge resurgence, but I would say certainly from anecdotal data and a little bit from this, that boarding and boarding day have seen a growth in the number of the international students. They've really done well. They've handled the pandemic really well with regard to the international students. Now, day schools, this is misleading with a day because we used to collect at NEIS, we used to break it down, day and day boarding. We no longer do day boarding. We seem to have added day boarding into the boarding day category. Don't ask me why, but that's why this is something that we need to look at a bit more, which is if in fact the international kids are gravitating to that boarding experience, is that because of safety issues related to COVID? Is it because it's a more consistent educational experience than homestay? What's up with that? And we need to look at that a bit further, not now, but at a sort of as a research initiative. We did a pop-up survey last month, and we're looking at the total international student enrollment. Some of you then put in the chat box, you're doing okay, a little disappointing, really great. And that's totally reflected on this slide. So you have about half of the members that are doing really very well, like, you know, super well, same as last year, or in this case, we've got 33% that have been doing better than last year. But the flip side of the coin is that we have almost an equivalent number of schools that are doing less well total with the international kids. So when we think about enrollment, some schools are doing great and others are not. And we need to better understand for those that aren't doing well, why that is. And for those that are doing great, why that is. Because one ends up having, in a sense, different recruitment and retention strategies. China, again, we're still with the total enrollment. So with no surprise, right, that we're seeing a softness from China because the kids haven't been able to get out of the country. Visa processing is still backlogged. US and China go back and forth on who is actually allowed to fly to the US in terms of the airlines, and then we shut them down. It hasn't been easy. We cannot give up on China. China remains a very strong and active market. We're going to look at that a bit more in a moment. But this is kind of interesting with the total. Now, what about the new? So we also want to look at the new, because if you don't have the new kids coming in and the new funnel, then you're going to be hit further down the line. So these are going to be third formers, fourth formers, maybe eighth graders, so 8, 9, 10. And you can see here, again, we've got some schools that are doing great and other schools that are not. But this is, again, helpful as you sort of digest your own position relative to other schools. And then when you talk with the board and the head, about this is how we're doing relative to others. China, again, similar kind of pattern here, right? This is again with the new kids, softer with fewer students at 33%. But then you have over 20% of the schools reporting more kids from China. Now, again, I don't have the breakdowns to specifically which schools those are, but that's something that we need to do some more homework on. When it comes to retention, right, we talk a lot about recruitment, but we have to talk equally about the retention, particularly now, because if I've got the kid in the school, I don't want that wonderful child to leave. And it's because you're part of my community. It's not just for the income from the tuition. It's because you're part of my community. So whatever we're doing really well because the retention rate here is huge. This is absolutely fabulous. So we should celebrate this, and we should also get a better idea as to why the retention is working. Like specifically, what is it that is making this possible? Tied in with this, because again, we're still kind of in the shoulder season of the core of COVID. So health and well-being is emerging as one of those significant issues for schools now. For both faculty and for students, student health and well-being, faculty health and well-being is really, really significant, much more so than it was before the pandemic. So when we asked this question back in April, is this a bigger, lesser issue for you? 51%, that's not inconsequential. We're saying this is to a greater extent an issue for us. We're having to think about different strategies as to how we support our students, international kids, how we then communicate with parents, how we work with our faculty and others to figure out how we can be there on an ongoing basis for our international students who have different needs, right, than our quote unquote domestic kids. Similarities, but differences when it comes to the support that these international children will need, might need. So as you can see over here on the left, the question is the percentage change, or it has to do with types of support. Top is enhanced health and well-being services and support, increased admin and faculty contact with international parents, student parents. So that's one of those things that schools did super well during COVID, regular contact. Remember, we're like all this thing, like the head every week has a town hall with the international parents, or, you know, emails to the parents each day or every week. Your kid is okay. Thank you so much. All the way down the list here. And what would be really interesting, maybe you could put this in the Q&A box, not the chat box, but the Q&A box. What is it that you have been doing to support your international students, particularly when it comes to health and well-being? So if you just could take 30 seconds to just jot down a couple of things, and we're going to save the Q&A text so that we can add that to the slide deck. So you'll have that because there's some really good information that's being shared there. So let's look. Anyone have any thoughts? If no thoughts, that's okay too. So let's move on. Doesn't mean you can't continuously put stuff in, but let's sort of move on. Okay, we have one person. Yeah, no, see, this is great on education dorm staff, right? Wonderful. Touch points with families. So these touch points, I love that word, right? Because then the parents and the kids know that we genuinely care about them. And we're going to demonstrate how we do that. So this is fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing this. Yes, I'm so sorry.
Janice, I have a question.
Yes.
on the heels of some of this wonderful data that you're sharing here, and knowing so many of us as admission and enrollment professionals are also thinking about those that we are recruiting, reaching out to, we need to give a mind's eye to what might be elements and aspects that would contribute to retention or be distractors from retention. Mm-hmm. And where I'm going with this in the spirit of that profile is there are many countries that are either known for a tendency to send their students just for 2 years, or a tendency to start quite young and want to carry through a high school experience, and other profiles only sending their sons rather than their daughters. Has NAIS are you aware of other research that might get into some of those elements as we think about a recruitment pool of sorts?
Thank you, Janice. And the short answer is no, but it is an incredibly good question because, I mean, for many reasons, but one of the things that threads that I wanted to pull out from that is that as we, and in fact, the next slide, as we get into markets, thank you for that tee up, is that as we think about different markets, those markets might not be the 4-year or 6-year investment in sending my child to an independent boarding day boarding school. So the strategy, and this is what I think is so important about the question that you raise, is that how we used to approach recruitment and retention, I think, was definitely more generic, for a better word. And now it definitely has to be more niche. We know that as consumers. I mean, I don't want to be confused with my neighbor. I'm me. I have my own particular needs. It's sort of like a job to be done. We'll talk about that too in a moment when we hit parents. So this is something that we do need to have some significant research on, because if you're recruiting from Germany, where they're here for a year, maybe 2 years, or Brazil or Mexico, right, which tends to, I think, send for about a year and not the 4-year stint, how do we recruit and retain differently? And it's word of mouth. So the kid has a wonderful experience and they're going to tell their friends, and that's how we operate as a international student admission model. So that was a great question. Thank you very, very much for that. I wanted to, as we sort of push through this, do this as a reminder, like when we think of our markets, how we are perceived both as colleges and universities here in the US and independent schools very much hinges, unfortunately, on factors that are beyond our control. So those countries that are doing amazing jobs are those in terms of making international students feel welcome, are those countries that have very intentional, very overt international student policies. Australia, England, Canada. And they talk about, we want you here, we'd like you to attend our great colleges, and we'd like you to stay on for 5 years to work, because we know that you have so much to contribute. It doesn't help if the signal is, just come on over here, spend your money, and then you can go home. Thankfully, the U.S. does have a nascent policy promoting education promoting America to the international students, promoting international education. But it is not as mature as it is in other countries. So when we look at, is the US still a number one destination? It is absolutely, because we have so many people coming to the United States. There are fewer, but there's still a huge number. The UK is edging us out by a little bit at the moment. We'll see after a cold winter, and the pound, maybe the pound will attract a lot of people because it seems to be under a dollar at the moment. Now's the time to go to Harrods and buy a lot of holiday gifts. So this is a really, really important piece, along with understanding what it is that parents, international parents, are looking for when they're deciding where to send their kid. So not just which country, but which school, which part of the country, of the U.S., right? So the three jobs to be done, we did this research back in 21, in the January of 21. And the jobs that international parents have are not dissimilar from what domestic parents have. It's just that they're like three instead of four, the three jobs. So job four is get my kid into Harvard at all costs. Pressure cooker is great. Job three is I want that whole child approach. You know, I want to prepare my kid for sort of a global community, global citizenship. And then job two is definitely college track, but it's not a pressure cooker. That's very simplistic. But it is really, really valuable for you all to have a sense of who your parents are. We're going to skip the chat box reflection, but think about, if you would, and just put in the Q&A as I go along, as you think about your international parents, if you were to generalize, like, are they mostly job four? Are they mostly job three? Mostly job two? Just put that in the Q&A, and then we'll look at that in a moment. So our top markets continue to be China, South Korea, Mexico, Canada, and Vietnam. The sixth is Japan. We often sort of pivot between Japan and Vietnam, Vietnam and Japan. And for so many years, South Korea was number one. Mexico was like right up there. And then China came along in 2008-09, as we saw in the very early slide. And it remains still the number one driver. Our top competitor countries. Now, remember, just 30 seconds ago, I was talking about those countries with really articulate national policies regarding international education of students. Which of these four or five countries are three competitor countries? This is from a pop-up that we did with our schools back in April. Where are the parents applying as well? Canada, UK, and Australia. I threw in New Zealand because I thought that was like really safe, but definitely not New Zealand at this juncture because no one was allowed into New Zealand. So, well, Australia was a bit tough as well, but the three big ones, Australia, Canada, and UK. We need to keep an eye on those. So I'm going to introduce this word, and I want you to hold on to it because I'm going to hit it in a few moments, signals. And I want you to think about, as we're looking at this stuff, what are the signals that I should be paying attention to that might impact my international student program 5 years from now, 10 years from now, beyond? So this is something, too, that I wanted to throw in here, which is we're beginning as a signal, and this is what I love tracking signals. I'm really interested, particularly as China is building up its domestic reputation for collegiate level. They've been cracking down on international elementary schools. Where are parents looking? Are they looking equally abroad as in their home country or their region? And indeed, the answer is that we have 37% versus last year, this time last year, families are looking closer to home. So we know that Eaton has just launched, I believe this year, Eaton Japan. So they're having problems there in China, but it's not a problem because the Chinese families will say, Japan, that's closer. And they have a lovely experience, Eaton, you know, diploma, they get to go skiing, probably charge $100K a year. But this is something that is a data point for us as we look at a changing landscape. And when Iwana and I were doing discovery conversations late spring, early summer with admission folk, enrollment managers, managers such as yourselves, this is kind of what we were picking up. We were hearing that indeed financial aid or academic scholarships is becoming really key as we're going out there to recruit in new markets, Vietnam in particular, Brazil in particular, where money or prestige is tied in with either financial aid or academic scholarships. They noted that Africa is a great untapped market, but it's not something that one can navigate alone. One actually needs to work with an agent. It's still out there. Higher ed is beginning to get more fully into Africa. And this is a recurring theme that it is a challenge finding agents now, and it's a challenge to vet agents. So if I'm new to an agency, how do I know it's any good? And at this point, the only way is by asking Grapevine, how are you doing with this agency or agent? This is a report that came out last June by Oliver Wyman. It's a firm, marketing firm, and they did this really deep analysis of what they think the Chinese market's going to be looking like for higher ed and for that matter, K-12. And at the bottom line is that they're expecting definitely steady sort of incremental growth for the next 5 years, and then it's going to flatten out. Depending upon the geopolitical situation, we may find that flat is not flat. It sort of starts taking declining mode. So originally we were thinking things are going to start declining in the mid-2030s. I just feel that's probably been accelerated with all the things that are going on in the world stage at the moment. And what about agents? So we talked a lot with our mission friends about where things were going with agents. They're having a tough time. So then we had these great conversations with the agents themselves. And so what we were hearing is that definitely there's more competition out there. Agencies have been downsized during COVID. Big ones are still out there. They've gotten a little smaller. The mid-sized ones have gone out of business. You've got boutique. So you have fewer agents or agencies, and they're more particular about whom they want to take on as clients, school clients. So that was really, I thought, super interesting. This was fascinating that we're beginning to see the use of by international families in South Korea and Mexico using agents more than they had before the pandemic. The agents are thinking quite positively that for this year, that there will be more international students enrolled for 2022-23. So we're going to see when we get the new Dazzle data and when we get the latest SCBP Freedom of Information data, we'll be able to see whether those projections were actually on the money. The agents, absolutely, seven, eight that we spoke with, digital marketing is where it's at. And particularly with China, we'll have a quick scan of that in a moment, but all about digital marketing. In Vietnam, it's still all about in-person relationships. And then the agents talked about the importance of cultivating really good relationships with the agents. So the agent-client tie is really, really key. Always has been important, but it seems to be even more important now. So what about strategies? What are we doing in terms of the recruitment part of this? So we've seen, what the landscape is looking like with enrollment. We've heard from the practitioners. We've heard from agents. So what about getting out there in the field? I mean, I need to get out there. So where are, and this is a survey we did in August, what are the top countries? So Mexico, Vietnam, Japan, South Korea. What's not on that top list is China, because it still continues to be really complicated. Once you're there, there's still a quarantine period. You never know if there's going to be a lockdown. I don't have 3 weeks to devote to going. So that is really, really interesting. It'd be fascinating to know, too, where you're planning on traveling and when. So when we ask this question, like, when are you going to go do this? Next month, November, and then the spring. And then I'm thinking the reason actually we have quite a few folk that are indicating it could be a both and versus just either or, is that so many more schools, and I don't have data for this, so I need to find this out, are doing rolling admission for their international families. So I'm kind of still very receptive to applications in July, August. Have you come in September? Maybe October. And so the recruiting season is not just October, November, maybe December, but it's definitely the spring. So this is kind of an interesting one for us to watch. Definitely key takeaways, meeting with parents. So prospective parents, past parents, current parents, not alums, really, really important to be seen and to reconnect, especially after COVID. This is another one in terms of the recruitment strategies when we were asking about this in April, May. Social media. None of this, I know, will come as a surprise, but look at this, like huge, particularly with China. When we hit the China slide in a moment, you'll see why. Word of mouth, huge. That is why there's such attention to the parents, because they're the ones who would be your number one, like, get the word out. I had a wonderful experience. China. So let's focus on China for just a moment here. Everything, and I was really, Iwan has been telling me this for the past year, and said, oh my God, Jefferson, everything is on the iPhone or the Android. I said, oh, come on, really? They're not doing the laptop? No. No one is doing desktop. No one's doing laptop. They're all doing the phone. Everything is on the phone. Your website has to be completely navigable via the phone. All of that is happening in this environment. The other core thing that was a takeaway, and you all know this, is that with the new privacy laws that China has introduced as of a year last June, July, is that no longer can one go to the big three data mining internet companies and say, oh my God, who's looking at this page and who's doing that? That's no longer possible. So you cannot buy, you cannot see that data. And that's why the digital marketing, that's where all the big companies are doing digital marketing. So in country, got to work the firm, how you do it, very, very different scene. So as we think about the strategies, for like three things that you can do, make sure that you know your parents, like who's interested in your school? What's the job to be done? The second part of this is know you're unique. And our friends down at Crane did a really, really good webinar for us last September, and that's still up on the NEI's website. So Shelley and Christina, about how to tell your story. And if you're recruiting internationally, and of course, if you're recruiting domestically, but for us, we're talking about the international. So know you're unique and how you then message that authentically to different families in different countries. And then lastly, speaking of the niche, is know your market, right? This is like really, really key. So we've done a lot of stuff with trade.gov. We've got deep dive on updated documents on Brazil, on Mexico. We just did one on Japan. Really, really interesting stuff. So those three core things. And now we're going to get to what I love, which is the futurist part. So you've got all that cool data part going, right? And now I want you to think about this. Quick story. Different from Christopher Walken. Brother and I are, Mike and I, it's my brother, love hiking. We're like alpine hiking. We're finally able to get out of the United States in early June, a trip that had been postponed twice thanks to COVID. And so there we are in Munich on our way to Garmisch-Partenkirchen in the Bavarian Alps. And this is right outside the terminal. Now, some of you may know that Munich is actually the home of BMW. It is not the home of Audi. Audi, however, has decided to go smack right into Munich and challenge BMW. As a result, we have at least 50% of the cars in Munich are Audis. They are not BMWs. That has changed. So I love this, and I just bought myself an Audi, so a wagon. I'm a big wagon guy. So love this, and got my brother in tow, and I said, oh my God, let's go look at this. This is really cool. And this jumped out at me. future is an attitude. Like 10 pictures later, my brother's saying, sorry, man, we have to go. We have a bus to catch. And so like, this is us. Future is an attitude. As admission folk, need to have this as a as your background. Because what we're really talking about is this notion of strategic resilience. So Deloitte, McKinsey talk about this. We need to think about strategic resilience in these three ways. We have to be, think of our schools holistically. So in admission, you need to know everything that's happening. The second part of it is you're doing the present, you're doing everything right now to ensure that your core, it's like core fitness, the core of the school is strong. The third part of this, and that's the middle, is that one needs to look for new opportunities, and for that matter, challenges, at the edge. So this is the tie between signals and edge. Really, really key. So I see a challenge in that we are not minding the gap. Whether we're admission folk, you're in development, you're in a trustee, head of school, we focus so much on the now and not on the next. So super quickly, you've got 15 seconds to look at this image. And if you could, just quickly put in the Q&A what you think this image is. Just put it down there. When I saw it, I thought there were a lot of angry clouds. I'm not going to bias you. You just quickly put down what you think. So I'm going to open this up so I can see this. And wait, I got to go down. A skull, a face, great. How about one more? Oh God, person looking at the sky, some brilliant man. Thank you. This is awesome. So let me tell you what this is. There is a nose. There are two eyes. There is a face. It is a cow. When you look at this. Now, the reason this is called Dahlenbach's cow, and the purpose of showing this to you is that we need to train ourselves to look for things that are hidden. Because when you see the signals out there and you begin to connect dots, you're able to identify patterns, the cow. You're able to then project what is going to be a potential challenge or opportunity. You create a scenario and you pressure test that scenario. So you're doing two things at once. You're both monitoring as an admission officer, you're monitoring right now, like next year. And then I'm also looking ahead to the future. And you are a futurist, right? This is what this is. You're about making projections. So your role in working with the head, with the board, with your colleagues, is to look ahead. And Amy Webb, who's this really, really well-known futurist, talks about these 11 macro change buckets. We're not going to go through them all, but I've identified them and you can look at them later. But this is when I'm looking randomly out there, I'm going to sort of put those random signals into relations with geopolitics. What's going to impact my international program if China doesn't want to talk to us anymore? If the economy sinks, if GDP actually gets worse and worse, if the dollar grows and the pound drops to 50 cents, what does that mean for my program? Not just now, but down the line. So that's what we're looking at. And one has this extraordinary then when the dots adapts this great mindset of, I'm ready for ambiguity, right? Our shifting sands thing. I love collective intelligence. That is what ASAP does so brilliantly, among many things, is this sense of community. I get to share, right? I get to collectively tap into all the satellites that are picking up data points. So I can help design my program and prepare for a different world in the next couple of years. This is the horizon. You need to look at the 10 plus and definitely the 5 to 10, not just the 0 to 2 years. So key, definitely better to be surprised by simulation rather than being blindsided by reality, right? Really, really important. So quick couple of things. We're going to drive right through these. This is an example of an industry that was blind to the signals. Signals that have been around for 25 years. Ever since Al Gore said in the 80s, we need to be concerned about global warming. Who cares about global warming? We are now looking at the end of the internal combustion engine. So suddenly, entire industries that have been built around building and repairing and making parts for cars is going to shift. So when you look at 2035 on this, all those little teeny boxes, that's the decline of the industry. They were not looking at the signals. They're quickly converting to EVs, electric vehicles. They're trying to figure that out. So I'm going to just throw out a couple of things. When I think about having my futurist hat on and looking for signals, this is what I mean. I've been doing a lot of reading on the metaverse, which I'm sure you have as well. Multi-trillion dollars going into this virtual VR, AR world at the moment. What is fascinating about this is education is being identified as one of the top major uses and places for the metaverse. If I'm in the admission area, I'm going to be saying, maybe I could actually provide recruit to a virtual fill-in-the-blank school in the metaverse. Not the same as in person, I know this. This, however, is a different generation, different environment. This is a signal we need to be looking at. Higher ed is already getting into this. There are 10 of these metaverse universities that are opening up this autumn. What about offering different kinds of experiences? This is our target, our niche. If I'm in Indonesia, you want to study X, what can I do to tailor your educational journey? What might that look like? Things are moving to that part of the world. A signal is how many planes are both Airbus and Boeing selling to that part of to Asia? Huge quantities. Most of the traffic share, right, is going to be there. Same thing with data centers. Look at where the data centers are being built. Data centers are providing the internet for the families. Internet means that you have new businesses, a larger middle class, a wealthier middle class. It's a signal. Need to pay attention to it. Another signal would be the Tesla experience. Why is the admission experience at our schools so 1900s? I mean, how many times have I gone to my own school's website? I'm a trustee of one of my schools. And I have no idea how much it costs to go to WIS. I don't know where it is. The whole thing is too complicated. I have too many tests that I have to take. I mean, my God, you need a special degree to be able to figure that out, right? So these are the kinds of signals that you all, I would encourage you to be thinking about. They're present, but they have future possibilities. There are things that we haven't seen on the radar that you will be seeing as a community that then become grist for projections, grist for scenarios, which can then be pressure tested. So we're going to go, quote unquote, off mic. We've got about 5 minutes. I'm going to show you some questions. What would be great? And you can think about these questions later, but would be super interested. I'm going to show you one slide in case everyone starts bailing. So I'm going to do one slide and I'm going to come back to this. These are four books that you have to read. These are going to get you in the future mindset. Three of them, the last three, just came out within the past month and a half, 2 months. The first one came out in June 21. Love this one. The woman who wrote it is the editor, U.S. editor for the Financial Times. She got also her anthropology degree, as did I, from Cambridge, so I'm slightly biased, but it's about applying an anthropological vision to your surroundings. And all four of these are really, really relevant. So strategic questions and considerations here for a conversation. How is your school? And Nicole, I think you all have been doing this for a while. You've always been thinking about how do you plan, right, for an international market that's different, that's not dominated by China? How does one modify the recruitment strategies to therefore adapt to a different scenario here? And how, in fact, do I diversify my market? So easier said than done. I'd love to diversify my market. Well, it doesn't happen overnight, right? And who's going to help me? And how do I get started? That's why the ASAP community is so important, because you can ask these questions. You can do the same thing on NEIS's admission list or the global list. But ASAP is your built-in community for this kind of thing. So let's see if there are any thoughts on any of these. I'm going to zip over to, I love the, all the, see, isn't that interesting with the, like the cow? We see things differently. That's the point of that thing, right? There is no, this is a cow. So I'm looking at things differently, but it's how we look for those signals and how we are able to develop these patterns, you know, look for and see the patterns, connect the dots. That takes a little bit of training. And we all bring something to painting that picture. Janice, you're off mic.
I'm off mic only to reinforce so much of what you're saying, but also I think as I was taking some copious notes, you know, the signals and the edge and the mind, the gap. I also thought, again, you know, what chicory cigarettes and click, 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 you know, if this was a poet at time, was profound. And finally, with regard to, as people, again, feel free to jump in with Q&A to Jefferson's discussion question here. I think as well, the perspective part is something we sometimes don't play into as much as we should in the role that we play at our schools. I think we look at data and yet we listen to the whispers, and we are so in that moment that to take a step away, which is what you're encouraging us to do, and ask the question why, or to even look at it a little differently, or for that matter, ask people on your campus to look at something to see, because you can't unsee the cow, for them to see it is critically important.
That's right. And Janice, on that, the trustees are untapped signal sources because their businesses, I could be in the automotive industry, whatever. So you might think, oh my God, I'm in admission. I work with kids, you work with cars. So why should I listen to anything you have to say? Turns out that all of those things that they're dealing with are things that we're going to be dealing with, because that informs parents who are purchasing, it informs what students need, all of that kind of thing. So this is like so rich, and I'm thrilled to do this with everyone. And I do apologize, I've got about a minute, and then I'm afraid I have to jump to another. I know, it's like a rare popular day for me. Then it's going to be all quiet for the rest of my.
There you go. But we've allowed you the opportunity through the tools of this webinar to unmute yourselves if you wish to show your screen or unmute yourself if you have a thought or a contribution that you'd like to make. And we welcome that. But I think, again, we're finding that many of you are also writing to us privately saying that you need to roll off. So, okay.
So, Jefferson,
any closing thoughts?
Well, one, thank you for everything you're doing for our schools. Thank you for supporting and trying to keep the international student programs robust. Mm-hmm. Do not diminish those. The contributions the international kids make far beyond the financial ones. We're dealing with such a different time. And I was just on a webinar with Claire Siski from GBG talking about global competencies. It fits in with what we're doing and talking about right now. And Janice, just what you were saying, we need to step back. In order to strengthen the program, we have to step back, look at the signals. So this has been fabulous. And thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me. Anyone would like to talk with me further about it, please give me a call or send me an email. When I send the deck, you'll have my contact information there. But I'm so appreciative of this opportunity. Wonderful to see you all. And have a great, great rest of the week.
Thank you so much, Jefferson. Right. And to all of you, goodbye. And thank you so much for joining us.
Great. Thank you.